Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan, Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, man?
You're alive.
I am alive. It seemed like a lot of people were wondering about that.
I had to make a video. An appeal.
Oh, I didn't see it.
I had to explain to everyone you were missing in South Carolina. You had gone incognito in the sense that your phone had been turned off.
Yeah.
You were uncontactable. So that made me realize that DVR was in play.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tried to tell people, you know, don't text, don't tweet. Just let him. And then at midnight,
he reemerged
with one of the great texts of all time. What the bleep have I just witnessed?
Couldn't believe it. Yeah, I decided yesterday because my flight was at 5:30. And so I kind of decided, like, in traveling with a three-year-old, like, it's not like I could go to an airport bar and just watch until my flight boarded.
I mean, you could, but it's messy.
No, I couldn't. There's just no way. And so I said, you know what? I'm shutting off. And I turn, usually I'll go into like airplane mode or something like that. But this time I said, you know what? I still want to be able to have access to like my Gmail or whatever in case I have to do work or whatever. But so I still wanted internet. And so I shut off text messages completely. I didn't even know you could do that, but I shut them all down and I just disconnected. And when I got to the terminal, I saw that the game was on at like some corner area.
Oh,
and
no.
At one, but I made sure I put my back to the screen.
Oh, Lord.
And at one point, I heard a guy scream. And I still, there was, like, in my head, I was thinking, okay, what could that have been? And in having now watched the game, I have no idea what, I'd love to find that guy and be like, what was that moment that I heard that?
Man being murdered, Andrew with his back.
No, he was watching the game. He was in one of the spots where he was watching.
You don't know that.
But I'd love to know what it was, because my God, there were so many moments from that Tottenham-Manchester City game.
But you gotta watch.
That caused people to just scream.
But the great thing is you got to watch it in purity.
I know. I had no idea. I truly had absolutely no idea when I turned it on at about 10:15 last night as to what happened. So like I always say to people, if you're willing to disconnect, it can be done.
Yeah.
It can be done.
Going off the grid is not for Alex Jones fans and survivalists alone.
No, it's for soccer fans.
Soccer fans.
Yeah. Oh my God, JJ. I mean, look, the only thing I guess I could compare it to for how you're feeling as a fan, such a different game, but probably the agony and emotional changes of the USA Algeria game.
Mm.
In terms of just the way I felt when it was over, just like this feeling of like, just like you're spent, like you just ran a marathon or something. And I think that's really the only other one that I remember.
You're drained and you're sweaty after it. You know, you feel tired, as if you played some physical part in it. That was that kind of game, even for the neutral.
It was unbelievable. Before we get kind of into the nitty gritty of the game, it's kind of fun to like talk about the fan aspects of it. And you know, obviously, I said on the podcast earlier this week that the 10-minute stretch from minute 50 to minute 60 of Liverpool Chelsea was the 10 most exciting minutes of the season so far. If that's the case, then what are the first 20 minutes of that Tottenham-Manchester City game?
Now, I got bashed for being called a PFM, but I tweeted out straight away. I said, this is wildly enjoyable, but it's utter chaos and silliness. And it was utterly silly. It was...
Every time somebody went forward and attacked, they scored.
I had... Because I was making notes.
Yeah.
And I was also trying to live tweet it, because I do recognize the fact that a lot of people, they don't have the time to DVR and watch it at the end. They maybe can't get out of work in the middle of the day. Although it seems as if most of New York just takes the Champions League days off.
I know you do.
Yeah. But I mean, I can do that. And so I'm live tweeting it. I basically look up and I see the smiling face of Son. Like twice. And has he scored twice? Good Lord.
It was wild.
It was wild.
Honestly, it was totally wild.
And I mean, it just seemed to be a montage of keepers falling over and going the wrong way for a while.
Well, I mean, if you want to get into like the game itself, I would say that, look, Manchester City's, let's be honest for a sec. For the most part, Manchester City were brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, they were, like, watching that game as a Spurs fan, they were terrifying.
Well,
Kevin De Bruyne was incredible. Raheem Sterling is now in the conversation. He's what Messi's doing is just kind of a thing unto itself.
Of course.
But in that next tier beneath Messi, Sterling is there now.
He's fantastic. That first goal was everything that a Manchester City fan would have wanted to have seen in the first leg, and was denied it by the eccentricities of a manager who we'll get to later in a bit of depth. But De Bruyne drives at that Spurs defence, slips the ball out. The minute he left his boot, Andrew, it was in. It was just a brilliant, brilliant goal. Now, I don't want, like, the Achilles heel for Manchester City, and the reason it was 2-2 after, 10 minutes, was basically Aymeric Laporte, who on the first instance, that's a really tidy Spurs move, nice interchange, but he had the ball back. And he just, he's off balance is the most forgivable thing I can say for him. And he just, this weak clearance pass.
He laid it off beautifully.
Teed it up for Son, and Ederson has committed himself. His weight's all going the wrong way, and he can't keep it out. And then he does it again. But the second one was unforgivable, where he steps, this hugely heavy touch. Which is
in the worst spot.
Spurs break. Now, let's be honest. Spurs break was devastating. City would have been proud of that break. Son shifts it onto his right foot and curls. And I mean, if we're talking about the echelons of Raheem Sterling, where's Son in all of this? You know? Unbelievable.
Yeah. His start to the game was incredible. It was after the way City started with the quick goal from Sterling. You know, the response, I would say the response from Son, but you're right, he got equal help from Laporte to make that happen. It was just the worst thing that could have happened for Manchester City. It was so deflating for them to the point where they then allowed it to happen, like you said, immediately after with the second goal.
And you're so conscious of away goals at that point, you're like, we are killing ourselves here. Then they go down the field with a brilliant, brilliant move. There was a 10-minute lull, if you can call it a lull. And they go down the field, and it's a quick free kick, and it's everything City are, quick and incisive. That ball from Kevin De Bruyne was that raking pass to the far post for Raheem Sterling. It was laser-guided. It was absolutely magnificent, and it shows his range of passing. His football brain is, again, we're talking about echelons of Messi and Sterling. De Bruyne's brain is on a different level, and he picks him out, and Sterling does the needful at the back post.
Yeah. By the way, even before De Bruyne's pass, I just thought that Bernardo Silva's little back heel to De Bruyne was great. Like, that whole move leading up to that goal was, it was classic Manchester City. It was beautiful. I don't know what you're... If you're a City fan, what do you... Like, I know from my perspective, at that point, I thought, uh-oh. Like, this is just way too much time for them to only need one more goal. I think Manchester City fans were probably thinking the same. Everyone felt like that goal was coming.
I felt that way. I was like, this is not a task City will find onerous. And then, as the game develops, you see a central midfielder for Spurs being... I mean, doing his best to stay on the field. Such was the need for him to be there. But when Sissoko went off, Andrew, it was over for me. Because De Bruyne kept getting in behind. You had basically an unorthodox midfield. You're asking midfielders like Son to do things that, which he did excellently, that he's not really built for. And the decision not to give the teenager Ship his introduction was probably...
Skip
was probably vindicated by bringing on Llorente. But De Bruyne kept finding spots. So did Raheem Sterling. I thought actually, Andrew, the game was going to get away from Spurs and City would win comfortably.
There was definitely a moment after Aguero scored, which, by the way, was just like a carbon copy of his goal against Queen's Park Rangers to win the league. Not the pass, but I'm saying Aguero's finish from where it occurred, from just like the way in which he shot it. It almost looked identical.
Sam Borden was tweeting about it. He was trying to kind of figure out whether there was blame to be appropriated to Hugo Lloris for being beaten there. And I think no goalkeeper likes to be beaten at his near post, but at the same time, he's absolutely leathered it so hard. But the main thing for me from that was the Kevin De Bruyne run, where he just slaloms. He takes off, Andrew, and no one can get close to him. He beats three or four players, really, before he slides it in to Aguero, and it was a really great finish. And then I'm like, that's it. That's it. They will prevail.
Tottenham had gone a long point up to that point without really showing signs of life. And you just felt like, you know, because then you start thinking about the way in which they scored those first two goals. And they came off of Manchester City mistakes. And you just started thinking, City are not going to let that happen again.
No.
And are Tottenham in a position right now where they're able to create their own opportunity without it needing to come from City mistake?
Well, no. Because of losing Sissoko, bringing in Llorente, Spurs were sitting much, much deeper. Eriksen was way too far away from the City goal. And it seemed like a manful effort to get down the field. Now, that said, Llorente still had that chance, the header, which Ederson saved, but prior to his goal.
Right. So the header happened for Llorente. He didn't convert it. And then Manchester City went right back down. And that's when they got the Aguero goal.
Right. So you feel as if it's going to take, they've missed that chance. You feel like there'll be one more chance for Spurs, law of averages. But that's it. And that corner kick, if they don't score off the elbow hip, this game is completely beyond them. So maybe we should talk about that now.
Yeah, sure. I'm just looking at the things I wrote down here, and there are so many angles I want to get to. We'll go to the VAR decision right now on first that one, then the real one at the end. Look, I'll be honest. Well, first off, I think you have to say that this is now the standard for VAR's impact and what it can mean. You look back at the first leg and Manchester City benefiting from a questionable VAR decision on the Danny Rose handball, which they were not able to convert, which, boy, did you ever think it would come back to bite them quite like this. And then VAR coming to save Spurs. Here's the thing. I don't know. I can't sit here and tell you exactly what it was the referee was seeing compared to what we were seeing. From what I gather, fans were seeing more than what he was seeing, which, if true, it's shocking. If I were a Manchester City fan, I don't really know how I would come to grips with that reality. All of this with VAR, it's all, as I've said from day one, it's all great, and I fully believe it should be instituted. But here's the thing: it's all great in theory. If the technology hasn't caught up to the idea of it, then it's a problem. So, if for whatever reason, if the technology is not allowing the official to see pitch side what we're seeing on television, that is a problem. And to me, that means that it's not ready to be used.
Correct. I think if you look at the angle that was replayed most regularly, that was the angle that the referee saw. And Craig Burley on ESPN FC pointed out that the other angle from VAR, the one that shows it hit the elbow, then hit the hip, was not shown. But the other thing is, Andrew, the handball rule. His arm's not extended. He has it tucked in. It's not at like some kind of unnatural angle. Although, again, that phrase does not work either.
But also, doesn't the handball rule change in this situation as opposed to if you're a defensive player for a penalty?
Yeah, he's not trying to propel the ball into the net with his arm or his hand. Honestly,
I just thought if it was your arm in some way aids in the goal being scored, which in this case, maybe that's up for debate. And in fairness to the referee, off of what he was seeing, his reaction was the correct one. Like, he kind of shrugged his shoulders
when he walked away
from the monitor and said, because I talked about it last week, if you can't tell after a certain amount of time, then you just have to go with what it was on the field. We can't sit here forever.
Yeah.
But the problem is, if he's not seeing every angle, I mean,
well, then that's a failure of the technology, and the technology's not ready to go, and so we don't have it.
It was very close. I do believe, everything that I've seen, I think you can now say, like, new replays have zoomed in on
from
it.
the other side.
I think you can now say it's fairly conclusive that it does in some way touch his arm.
Yeah, from the side we saw on TV versus there's a side now that's been retweeted about 100,000 times.
Yeah.
And that side, which the referee did not have access to, shows it clearly hits the elbow arm area and then comes onto the hip and into the net. The complicated legacy, just to get off VAR for a second, the complicated legacy of Fernando Llorente continues. It is,
I don't even know what to say about him. I hate him. I love him. He's my favorite player. He's my least favorite player. You're right. I will talk more about him because I have here, I do want to get to, there were so many like heroes, goats in this game. I do want to get to that, but let's stick with VAR for a second. Just go to the last one.
Yeah.
because this was really the moment. So after, I'd say from about the 65th minute on, I am now standing in my living room by myself. I can't sit. I'm pacing. And like I said on the podcast earlier in the week, you know, I didn't mean it to be funny. I just am trying to relay the feeling of Tottenham fans as all of this whole run is going on, this sense of doom that's coming.
Oh, people really responded to that, by the way. Yeah, they did.
Well, because I really think if you are a Spurs fan, you can resonate with that comment.
Yeah.
I really think that as a Tottenham fan base, we're all in that together, and we all know what that feeling is because we've seen it so many times.
It's like me on a hot June day and someone's handing out free ice cream. It's exactly what I need. This is a glorious moment. The ice cream is made of sharp glass.
Exactly. You know. Right. So for Manchester City to then score, for Raheem Sterling to score that goal after Christian Eriksen just commits one of the brainless errors of all time, it's fancy time is over, all right? Just smash the hell out of the ball like Victor Wanyama. He was making great tackle after great tackle, and then he didn't care where it went after that.
Yeah.
Like, just do that. For him to then pass backwards, have it deflected by Bernardo Silva, and then, like, I didn't need to see anything else. We all knew how that was going to end.
By the way, thank God for that deflection.
Well, yes, you could obviously say that now.
Because that creates the offside. If there's no deflection, there's no offside.
And then, so the goal goes in, and it just all felt so stereotypical. To the point where it almost felt stupid. Like, this is too following the script. And then, so the goal goes in, and I walk over to my basement door.
Oh, God.
And I just rest my head on the door. And I'm just standing there, and the TV is on, kind of in the room next to me, and I'm just motionless, just with my head leaning against the door at about 12:15 at night, and then I'm listening to the TV, and I hear this from as Danny Higginbottom first in analysis.
Eriksen turned back towards his own goal. There's an argument. Aguero, is he offside? I don't know whether.
I heard that. Because in real time, there was no part of me that thought there was any saving this through VAR.
Yeah.
And I heard that, and I lifted my head off the door, and I just looked over. And I thought, oh, hang on. And then this.
Eriksen turned back towards his own goal. There's an argument. Aguero, is he offside? I don't know whether. In that situation, is there a possible offside with Aguero?
My goodness, as if there could be any more drama. Oh, that's remarkable. The goal's chalked out.
I was utterly stunned because I was deflated for you. But more than anything, I looked at the Spurs players and I looked at them fall to their knees. I looked at them heads in hands. I looked at Alderweireld, who looked crestfallen. But I looked at them through the prism of all these years of things like this happening. Maybe, obviously not as dramatic, but of a narrative. And I looked at Pochettino and I looked at a broken man and I thought, might this be the end of the run?
You're so right. I was thinking the same thing.
Is this it? How much more can you take?
It felt like it was going to be a seismic moment in their history.
It felt like a bookmark to the end of something that was almost great for Spurs.
Because you're right, they've dealt with deflation many times before. And how many Tottenham games have we walked away from where we've talked on this podcast, you know, where the neutral applauds them for their effort. But at some point, it's just, that's not enough.
No, it's not.
And this was just going, like, you know, we heard it earlier in the 4-2 against Barcelona. We've heard it in Chelsea, in FA Cup semifinals against Chelsea and Manchester United. And, you know, and it just felt like this was going to be the ultimate in that, and I don't know how much more that players can take and the manager can take.
And I
then
tried
for that for that announcer to say that and me to it almost didn't hit me at first. I don't think it hit anyone. You could hear the crowd. It was
murmuring
like an awkward,
with confusion, silence.
Yeah, it was like an awkward, yes, murmuring is the right word. Not even like a roar from the Tottenham away fans. I don't think it even. Like the magnitude of that decision, I don't know if it really even hit anyone until play kind of resumed. And there was just this stunned feeling through that place and I think through every supporter of both clubs that were watching that.
It's our first tear in the goal celebration continuum. Our first real tear in that from VAR. Because Daniel Story, who we've had on the podcast twice, he was incensed by what the, not so much the decision, but rather the way it came about, what it did to that, that whole moment. But we, I don't want to go down that road again because we go into JJ's ethereal continuum. But yeah, he was up. I mean, I, from a Manchester City fan's point of view,
I can't imagine a worse way to lose.
The dream died in silence.
I cannot imagine a worse way to lose. You think the way Pep is celebrating, the scenes in that, in the Etihad, I don't think we've seen those scenes since that Manchester City QPR match.
Now, can we talk about Pep for a minute?
Yeah.
Or do you want
to... Well, here's the thing. I do want to kind of list heroes and villains from this. Because
okay.
It feels like there's a lot to go around. And if you want to start with Pep, that's fine.
One of the silent visions of the night was Leroy Sané on the bench for so long. And when he came on, he had an impact, Andrew. You know, he is a player that you wonder how much longer he's going to be at Manchester City for no other reason. It certainly can't be performance other than that there's something with the manager that's not quite right. How he stayed off for so long, I don't know. When especially when Spurs lost, the centre of their midfield was ripped away.
I know.
I don't understand. And when he came on, he set up Gundogan for a very good chance, which he really should have taken a touch. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about Pep. And let's go back to the first leg, Andrew, where this all began, where he leaves out... You saw the impact of De Bruyne tonight.
And over the weekend against Crystal Palace, every week he plays, every time he does anything.
Now, last week we talked about overthinking situations. And last year, when the same thing happened to where chaos ensued in a game against Liverpool in the first leg, there seems to be an inability for Pep to react because he is such a systems-based man. This is from Barney Roney in The Guardian this morning. There is a theory that Guardiola, the master of control and systems, just isn't suited to the intangibles of one-off knockout football. Nights where an entire campaign can be thrown away in a fit of human frailty or a surge of irresistible emotion. There is an awful lot in this that I subscribe to. He overthinks things. He is paralyzed by analysis. I don't want to say he tries to be too clever. He pays the opposition too much respect. And we end up with situations like this. Mm-hmm. His ability to think on the fly in these moments of chaos is extremely worrying in a competition that is now in its current guise. Once upon a time, it was ruled by cruel and cold calculating emotion, mostly by the Italian teams. Catenaccio, Andrew. I can't tell you how many nights as a young fella I watched Champions League quarterfinals, second legs and first legs that were as dull as bejesus. There was very little of this kind of mass chaos and everybody stick to a rigid formation. This is not the time for it now. You need to be able to adjust and harness the emotion and the chaos, and Pep can't do it.
So in terms of his overthinking things, I think the reason I you're really left with no choice but to agree with that is like, look, it's one thing to overthink it in terms of the formation you want to play.
Right.
You know, the style. Do we press against this team? Do we not? Do we sit back and defend a little bit more? Okay, fine. There's elements of that that I can certainly disagree with, like I did in the first leg when he's playing with an extra defensive midfielder. But to overthink it to the point where you opt to go not just with the extra defensive midfielder, but do that at the expense of your best player in Kevin De Bruyne.
Mm.
Like, there can just never be a scenario in a game of that magnitude where he's healthy and not playing.
And I don't mean to disparage Gundogan from the first leg, but we've seen this story before. No lesson was learned from the Liverpool game. You know, playing... Gundogan is a good player, but sacrificing De Bruyne in a first leg, there's no need. So, no disrespect to Spurs. It's... I can't understand it. I think Spurs were there for the taking in the first game. And Pep came away from it that we created a few chances, we did this, we did that. It was such a muted performance in the first game compared to what they were able to conjure in the first half at the Etihad yesterday. It
now,
just makes no sense.
Some of it comes down to just some unfortunate luck for him. you know, are we saying this if Aguero scores the penalty?
Are we saying this if
VAR doesn't allow Fernando Llorente's goal? Are we saying this?
But he's left the window open for it to happen.
You're absolutely right. You know, Aymeric Laporte, like what is Pep supposed to do about that? The guy's been a reliable defender for him for most of the season. I mean, you know, some of that is hard to legislate. But you're right. Look, Llorente does score the goal in the 73rd minute.
Yeah.
11 minutes go by before Leroy Sané steps foot out on the field. How can that happen?
How can that be allowed to happen? I don't. And look, folks, you can come at me and say, well, you know, he likes to do X or Y. He likes to, you know, he's very. This is a guy who is so rooted to the system. Rooney goes on in his piece to say this. When he started at Manchester City, there was that video, you know, that video was leaked of him on the training field, where I believe this kind of coaching should happen. I see him do it after games. I don't like it. He's in Sterling's face. He's doing this. He's pulling strings. He's doing all that.
Guys.
Yeah. When we get the ball, sit down, drink water, and relax. Sorry, that was halftime. And so he is very much systems and position and orientated. He painted a white dot on the side of the field during training and told Sterling to stand on it. He is so bedded to the idea of width. Who can give you devastating width in the English game better than Leroy Sané right now?
And now here's the thing. I can't necessarily sit here and tell you who Sané should have played instead of because, you know, for the most part, in attack, everyone in the second leg from Manchester City did their job.
Yeah, but
you, know, but, you can you know, like Bernardo Silva, I guess, would be the guy, but, you know, he scored and he was great.
But think on the fly, Andrew. This is... what you're supposed to be able to do.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know. Maybe so. Fine. You don't want to start Sané. That's one thing. But when you know you still need goals late in that game after Llorente scores that goal, and to wait 11 minutes, those are crucial minutes that they allow to tick away. I don't want to sit here and say that it's unforgivable stuff. They could still go on and win the league in epic fashion. You know, Pep is still a great manager. I'm not meaning to say that. You know that he's not great or worthy of what Manchester City are paying him. You know.
Yeah.
But it's certainly fair to ask questions. He's not perfect.
He said last season after Liverpool in the league, he said, we can allow it to go, you know, we can allow it to go to 2-1, but we mustn't lose control. They scored and they lost control last night. That's another thing.
Yeah.
Control is such a big part of what he does. He can't afford to lose it. And when he does lose it, he has no way to react.
In terms of other villains in this one, we mentioned Laporte. I don't really have much else to say about that. It was a horrifying night for him.
Yeah.
Simple as that. He was bailed out. And
he knows it.
Eriksen admitted that in the interview afterwards, that he basically thanked God that it played out the way that it did with the VAR decision. But just his decision to play that back pass, he would be one. The heroes for me, if Pep is a villain, I think Pochettino has to be a hero in that. The thing that I said on our last podcast when we were previewing this game was that I hope Tottenham still go out and play their game to a certain extent. And look, they scored two goals. Yes, they were opportunistic goals, but they did score early on. And more so, when Sissoko got hurt, to have Llorente come on and to go with two up front to like reinforce what you have up front. I thought that was a shocking decision. I saw Davinson Sanchez warming up. I'm thinking, okay, he's going to come on and they're going to go all out. Let's defend now, because we're worried that Sissoko does a lot in pushing the play forward and picking out that pass to Eriksen. You know, so once they lost that, I thought it'd just be defend at all costs now. So for Pochettino to bring on Llorente, who validated that decision in not just scoring the goal, but like we said, nearly scoring one right before that. Man, that was a bold, bold decision by him, and it paid off.
A moment. We're talking about moments that in a cup competition like this can swing one way or the other, and we talk about Laporte's mistakes, and we talk about the missed penalty in the first leg, but one moment for me was Danny Rose, when the goal was gaping for Bernardo Silva. He got his body. It's the save. Lloris makes a save.
It's a rebound right in front.
He spills it, and it's right in front. And Rose, what an excellent piece of defending to get his body in between and usher it away. That was just wonderful. So he's a hero for me as well. I thought Wanyama was excellent. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think Son. There's one reason I can't call Son a hero, Andrew. Never let it be forgotten that he did this. Yes, it's an advert for ice cream.
Yeah.
The visual is very important in that.
His little dance that he does and the t-shirt that he's wearing.
What is he wearing?
What are you wearing?
What year was that from?
I need to speak to my sister and my Korean sister-in-law.
If that was done in 1983, I'd say, okay, it's still weird, but I get it. That couldn't have happened recently, could it?
He is quite something. He is a hero, and yet at the same time, why not do something for coffee? Do a cool coffee or a car advert.
The ice cream looked great.
It looks like a Cornetto.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess final thoughts on this one before we move on to Ajax and Juventus. This whole run that Tottenham are on right now, it's easy to forget where this all began. Remember, the first Champions League match for them against Inter, when they have the lead late and give up two late goals for Inter to steal that. Then the Barcelona game, where like it was the ultimate, you know, oh, little Tottenham. Like, oh, you played well, we're proud of you. Yeah. But Messi was incredible.
No points after two games.
And then PSV, this like the next one. Okay, this is the one now where they really need to do something. And they give up the 87th minute equalizer, just 1 point from their first three. Then it starts to turn. The two, you know, you kind of thought it was over. They played PSV in the next game at Wembley, and Harry Kane scored two late goals to overturn the goal that was scored in the second minute from Eindhoven. Kane scored in like the 87th and 89th, yeah. Or 79th and 89th, something like that. And it was a fun win, but even then I remember thinking, well, okay, it's nice to win. Like, it's not going to be a total embarrassment. And then you get the Inter game with another late goal for Tottenham to win that. And then it comes down to the Barcelona one, and you get Lucas Moura with the late equalizer coupled with PSV helping out Spurs. It's a run that really almost never should have even happened. The help that they needed to get to this point and the way they've taken advantage of it, they kind of bossed Borussia Dortmund with a 4-0 on aggregate. They lose Kane. They're without Eric Dier. They lose Sissoko in
no
the second
Harry
leg.
Winks.
Harry Winks goes out with an injury before this game. And yet they beat Manchester City, and they're into the semifinals for the first time in their history.
I wonder, and we've got so much to cover, so I don't want to go deep on this, but I wonder, is the smaller squad that Spurs are operating out of, does that create a togetherness and a resiliency and a fight?
Yeah, I don't know I'm sure it does, but that's a slippery slope into the are they better off without Harry Kane, and I just can't entertain that. It's silliness and it's nonsense.
Let's save that.
I will say, I think as a Tottenham fan, I'm prepared to move this to the top of the list for me.
Wow.
For best Tottenham game I've ever seen.
Yeah. By the way, Spurs are in a European Cup semi-final. I will deal with what people have been saying about that in my red cards, in my man of the match section, actually.
Also, it does move us one step closer to my nightmare scenario.
The caught-offside cup, European Cup final.
I can't deal with it.
People are talking about it already.
I don't want to do
people
that
are demanding another rap battle, by the way.
I used up all my material on that one.
I would literally pay for Nas to come in here and take you on in my stead.
Let's move on to Ajax and Juventus, which probably would have been the headline grabber from these past couple of days had it not been for what happened with Tottenham and Manchester City on Wednesday. I think with Ajax, here's the thing that some people are having a hard time with. We don't want to... I really feel like you and I are trying to go out of our way to not be patronizing of Ajax.
Yeah, because they are three-time European champions.
Right. And because, you know, what they are legitimately a great team.
They're wonderful.
But here's the only problem that I'm having a hard time with in balancing that feeling with the feeling of, well, what are they? Like, they're not running away with the Eredivisie.
No.
Like, they're in a dogfight with PSV Eindhoven right now.
But they are absolutely built for these cup competitions right now in the way that they play, the fearless way. Andrew, the result absolutely flattered Juventus. It should have been 4-1. Such was Ajax dominance in the second half. Wojciech Szczęsny.
Oh, what a save.
Multiple amazing saves.
The one from point-blank range with one arm where he gives up no rebound.
Yeah, and what about the one from Ziyech, who, by the way, is the shock king of the world. He is the guy in nine-a-side on Monday Night Soccer where you're like, will you just pass the ball to me? He loves his shot. And you wonder if actually the wastefulness might be the thing that's going in their it's going to be in Spurs' favour in the semi-final. Neres, Ziyech, Tadic, all wasted chances. All in favor. In fairness to Tadic, his wasted chances where he centred it, where he should have shot himself. Right, so yeah. Maybe that doesn't count. But unbelievable performance.
JJ, they had one move up the field. It didn't result in a goal. But what was it, like a 14 pass, just bing-bong, up.
The movement. Del Piero spoke after the game, the Juventus legend, about the amazing thing about them. And he talked about the youth and etc. But he said it's none of that. It's their awareness of space, how they get between the lines, how they get behind you. They create triangles. They're like, I mean, they're, if Johan Cruyff, God rest him, was there, this is the kind of football he would want to play. This is the kind of football he instituted at Barcelona.
Yeah, it is a thing of beauty right
now. It is
now.
Absolutely gorgeous. Did Juve miss Chiellini at the back? I think they missed his leadership, but the way that midfield was passed through, I wanted to talk just a quick thing about Ronaldo and spending 88 million or whatever it was on getting him in, because he is money in the Champions League. That's a good decision. But if you look at the underperformers in this team, Dybala, an underperformer, Emre Can, not an underperformer, shouldn't be in a Juventus jersey. Mm-hmm. Matuidi, workmanlike, good player, still was a bargain buy. Pjanic, I mean, he had a couple of good moments, but otherwise, the second half, where those guys should be taking a grip of that midfield. They were totally Van der Beek, Ziyech, Neres, Frankie de Jong, Shona, passed through them. It was a masterclass. It's an indictment on Napoli and Carlo Ancelotti that they're like 17 points off these guys.
The league is basically decided.
Yeah, unbelievable.
I really think that, you know, it's, I almost don't even want to sit here and speak negatively of Juventus.
I know,
because
but
I really think that if the only reason we'll do that is because it's, I hate to say this, but because it's Ajax. Like, if Ajax gave that same exact performance, but they're wearing like Manchester United jerseys instead, we probably wouldn't have any problem with it. Juve just aren't as good a team.
It started with Jurgen Klopp after the Europa League final in 2017, when United won it. And he said, well, we played Sevilla, who were battle-hardened Europa League finalists, and United played only Ajax in the final. Well, let me cut this down from here on in. There is no more only Ajax. This team has been building over the last 3 years under the stewardship of Mark Overmars and the technical staff there. This is the team with a plan, and I'm telling you, Andrew, there's no reason they can't win the whole thing.
Yep.
There is no reason, and Spurs are obviously very aware of that. One thing that stood out to me, and I've said this before, but I have the perfect drop to accompany it. At one point, I'm watching Tadic just dice and slice this Juventus backline with unbelievable passing, and I'm thinking the absurdity of Southampton letting him go for peanuts out of the Premier League. And all I could think of was,
we are laughing.
It's nonsense. Where's your scouts, Premier League? The guy's only 30, 31. He, 13 million euros, waltzes out of the league. And he's in a European Cup semi-final, and he will be in my team of the Champions League.
Oh, yes, 100%.
Incredible.
I mean, remember his performance against Real Madrid in the second leg. And he hasn't stopped. He hasn't slowed down from that.
By the way, on in terms of encapsulating the night, last year it was Peter Drury when Roma knocked out Barcelona. This year, it's Peter Drury with a lovely little montage. His thoughts.
Summation,
yes. After the game in Turin.
The Ajax boys have kicked over the old lady. The upstarts have plundered the establishment. And the famous Ajax of Amsterdam are into the semi-finals of the Champions League for the first time since 1997. Ronaldo is out. For Juventus, the wait goes on. Youth has had its day. And who says that for this brilliant class of Ajax Amsterdam, who says that this is the end of it?
Do me a favour. No more it's Ajax. No more this is the end of it. And also, no more talking about the fact this team is going to break up soon because it's heartbreaking. I don't want to talk about it.
you're totally right about that. I think that you can go a little bit deeper on the Ronaldo stuff that you're referring to, and not just him specifically, but I guess that whole experiment from Juventus.
But he's done his job, to be fair to him.
He did. He scored the goal, once again.
He's the only one who did anything for them in the two legs.
Right. But, you know, there's part of me that wonders about that. Is that because he's there?
You make a very good point. The final for the 45 minutes, because I watched the first half of United Barcelona first, I wanted to get a taste for both games. The final 45 minutes was them belting balls to Ronaldo. And your argument would be that maybe that neuters someone like Dybala.
Certainly him.
Yeah.
Is it stunting the growth of certain other players? Now, by the way, that is not Ronaldo's fault.
No.
That is on each and every one of these other players to find a way to make an impact.
The only player that looked like scoring in the second half was Moise Kean, who came on...
For Dybala for, at halftime,
yeah,
right?
For Dybala, and he is going to be great. Just trust me, he really will. But he had a great chance. It was... The ball breaks... The only real chance in the second half... Not the only one, but the main chance in the second half. And De Ligt, out of nowhere, just comes across and just this nonchalant sliding tackle, recovery tackle. Ah, they're awesome.
Yeah, they really are. I wonder now for Juventus, because they went all in. I mean, when you spend that money on Ronaldo, and you kind of do so at the expense of some of your younger players, the goal here was not to win Serie A, which they're going to waltz to once again. This was about finally getting that Champions League that has eluded them. For a while now.
Do you know what's delicious? Ajax and teams like that, and from smaller leagues, the Agnellis, who are the owners of Juventus, they are at the forefront of this European Super League idea, which will be a closed shop, which will get rid of the Leicester Cities, the Rosenbergs.
It can't happen.
It can't happen.
It cannot happen.
No, it shouldn't be allowed. This is too much fun. Yeah. And it's just wonderful that he is to sit at home thinking about Dusan Tadic and Neres and Frankie de Jong and all these guys.
Yeah, I'm so curious what happens to Juventus now, because there's no turning back. Ronaldo's there. It's a 4-year contract. You're spending that money on him. This is like that was the ultimate in win now behavior. They're bringing in Aaron Ramsey, which I don't know. I do like him.
It doesn't put them over the top, though.
Completely changes the way I feel about them. But it doesn't necessarily mean that Juventus can't, just because they lost this year to Ajax, it doesn't mean that they can't go out with a similar team next year and win.
But they need better players. I honestly think they've looked at Ronaldo and said this is the missing piece, and they've brought in, like, I still don't understand the Emre Can signing. I don't want to hear from Liverpool fans. He was not up to par for us in the Premier League, apart from a bicycle kick against Watford. What makes you think he's going to stroll into the Juventus team and do anything for them? And, you know, maybe guys like Pjanic, maybe guys like Pjanic has been a very good player for him. Do you know what's another thing, Andrew?
Well, age is also going to be a problem
for
them.
That back line as well. They've got to re-up there. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where things go. I'll tell you what, we still have two other games to get to.
Well, we can flick. I'm going to be like a Senate subcommittee hearing.
I cede my
time on Liverpool because...
Well, you will cede your time next. We still have Liverpool-Porto, United-Barcelona, mailbag, man of the match, red card. Still a lot to do. Don't go anywhere. Oh, back now on Caught Offside. Hey, we just wanted to remind everybody to check out Laughter Permitted with Julie Foudy, her new podcast, which I guess isn't necessarily even so new anymore. It's kind of really off and running.
7 episodes in, Sydney Leroux Dwyer this week. Check it out. It's a podcast that's very good.
Nice. Laughter Permitted with Julie Foudy. You can check it out on all the ESPN Pod Center Network. We have been talking about the Champions League here. We've already talked about Tottenham advancing over Manchester City and Ajax over Juventus. Still two other games to mention, Liverpool and Porto. That was on Wednesday as well. Liverpool, in the end, romped to what appeared to be an easy victory. I don't know if it was quite...
I don't think it was.
...as easy as the score indicated, but Porto's inability to finish in the first half, I think, kind of sealed their fate.
Liverpool got battered for 30 minutes. Porto needed to score in that window. They did not. Liverpool get one chance, they score, albeit via, I think that was the first VAR review goal. Yeah. It was Mane, who was adjudged to be onside. And that was that, really. I know they got a goal back, but that was quite comfortable for the men in red.
Yeah. I know you mentioned about how fresh they appear to be right now, and you see a little bit of that now. It's going to get interesting for them because they march on in the Champions League. I remember we were joking about this a couple months ago about whether or not they even wanted to, and yet here they are going on to the semifinals, and it's Manchester City who are desperate.
Why is nobody talking about Liverpool's double Champions League and Premier League?
Absolutely. I mean, it's on. It's on right now. So we'll see if that catches up to them, because Manchester City, this... it's hard for this season, for me to envision this season ending for them without them winning the league or Champions
League.
Rory
Smith,
they are going to go full bore at Liverpool.
Rory Smith thinks the worst thing that could have happened for Liverpool was Spurs winning and tweeted such. And I subscribe to both versions. Seeds of doubt have been sown. Might be a psychological barrier, but also they may roll up their sleeves and be like a wounded lion and just go crazy.
It's truly amazing, by the way, that Tottenham and City play this weekend at the Etihad once again.
Yeah.
They go right back,
these guys.
I'll be curious, if will City come out just furious and just like ready to tear them apart with a 6-0, or are they now... And it, have they just taken a punch that they are not going to be able to recover from?
And then Bolden Llorente scores a hat trick.
But the thing with Liverpool and this title challenge, look, obviously Manchester City can now focus solely on winning the league, but it's not like they're playing Liverpool every week. Liverpool aren't playing against Manchester City. They still play who they play. Liverpool, it doesn't have to be pretty, but as long as they keep beating the teams that they're beating, it's only going to take one moment for City to potentially slip up, which we're now seeing is a thing that can happen. We talked about it earlier this week that City probably had the more difficult schedule the rest of the way. So, you know, they can focus, quote unquote, focus on the league all they want. It doesn't necessarily change what the outcome is going to be.
Before we talk United-Barca, people have been giving us credit for our mystical proclamations. Yours was that PSG could mess up again, and they did.
Yeah.
Mine was that there would be a ton of goals in Man City and Spurs, and there was. Also one, you get another one, though, because you said, not so fast there, and you waved a pencil at me when I said that Brighton would probably end Cardiff's campaign.
No, not yet.
Not yet, and it's a weekend Warnock for Liverpool, and that game... it's a little bit different.
It's on now.
Oh, it's on.
The relegation race is on now. And then we'll close out the Champions League look with Manchester United and Barcelona.
Yeah.
I know maybe the first leg was closer in terms of the score. I don't think anybody can look at this and necessarily be shocked. Lionel Messi was his usual self. David De Gea was not, allowing a goal that you just typically don't see from players like him.
Pushes himself into the optostats where he is in the... He's not at the top for goals conceded or mistakes leading to goals, but it's way higher than he'd like it to be for the season. It was a bit of a mess. They started so strongly. You had Rashford clipping the crossbar, scooped it up. They had a chance then with McTominay, who missed kicks. They could have really wrestled that tie back, but they didn't. And once Barcelona got hold of things, United did not have a midfield that could cope. First goal, Ashley Young makes a mistake. He should kick it out over the end line. Just kick it out. Don't give it up there. It falls to Messi, who gets on it with... he had a point to prove. Not a point to prove. He was... you know the anger from getting his jaw cracked or whatever,
right,
in Old Trafford? That residual anger reared its head in the Nou Camp. Skins Fred, scores a wonderful goal. And then, again, it's a turnover, but more or less a turnover in front of the United goal. And De Gea lets it dribble under his body. And that's it, Andrew. It's game over after that.
Oh, yeah.
There were some horrific, not safe for work images of Messi running at Phil Jones with a bandage on.
It was honestly sad.
It was sad. It reminded me of Gary Cahill there with Messi running at him once, where he just gave him twisted blood, I believe is the term. It wasn't good.
By the way, in fairness to David De Gea, the way that move ended with Sergio Roberto's shot from point-blank range... under different circumstances, it would have been like one of the saves of the Champions League so far.
Right.
But because De Gea already had the howler, and because that goal, whether it went in or not, wound up not even really mattering.
Yeah,
we kind of knew at that point it didn't matter.
And then Coutinho comes on second half and just bends one into the top corner and cups his ears, not at the Man United fans, but at the Barca fans who don't like him. So there we are. I don't know what...
I don't have really much else to say. I guess the only thing now is to say that the final four that we're left with, it probably wouldn't be the four that you might have guessed before the Champions League began. I think Barcelona and Liverpool, you wouldn't say, are necessarily shocking. Certainly not Barcelona. Tottenham and Ajax, I think you would have to say, are fairly surprising.
Yes,
despite the fact that Ajax have been great throughout, not just in the knockout stage.
You're right, but you still thought... that side will be populated by somebody else, and that's fine.
Right.
But we're past that now because we're at the semifinal stage.
And I think what you're left with is a pretty compelling Final Four teams here.
if Barcelona won't fear Liverpool, well, they might. They'll fear aspects of Liverpool. Liverpool will fear aspects of Barcelona. That game.
But you just said that kind of nonchalantly. Barcelona would be foolish to not fear Liverpool.
I know. They absolutely do. That front three is going to frighten them. Messi's going to frighten Liverpool.
Of course.
It's really teed up for quite a game. I wouldn't like to have to actually call that one. Because I actually think Liverpool can beat Barcelona. Equally, I think Barcelona can do a job on Liverpool. It's so finely poised. And beware, I mean, the trip. There's so many angles for the Tottenham Ajax game that we'll get to explore next week.
There is more to get into with that. It's funny because Tottenham are loaded with former Ajax players.
Right.
Eriksen, Vertonghen.
Alderweireld.
Davinson Sanchez. So, I mean, it's Ajax has almost been a feeder club for Spurs over the last several seasons. Yeah, I have no idea how that one is going to go. Son is suspended for the first leg, which is absolutely massive.
Crushing.
Harry Kane will, I'm sure, not be available for it for either one of these upcoming matches. So you're looking at Lucas Moura, Fernando Llorente, probably.
Troy Parrott on the bench?
I don't know.
Maybe.
I mean, this is what they're dealing with right now with some of these injuries that they've been dealt. Even with that, though, you know, they've battled through it. I don't count Spurs out. I don't know who I would say is the favorite. Maybe. I don't know. I was going to say maybe Ajax. It's pretty close to 50-50. It should be fascinating.
As Lamella passes to Parrott. It's the final moments. Parrott stands it up. Llorente!
Just like they thought it would be. Man, that was fun. Oh, my goodness. You have a mailbag here.
CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com, @SuoSoccerPod on Twitter, and CaughtOffsideESPN on the Instagrams, where I do some things. @GaiusGracchus65. We'll start off with this. This is for Andrew. Just have to say from one Spurs fan to another that this feels amazing. Not only is this the greatest accomplishment of the Pochettino era, this is the greatest Tottenham result of my lifetime. This doesn't happen often for us. Let's enjoy it. Cheers.
There's one thing that you do have to think about. Everyone has become, myself included, everyone has become so wrapped up in Tottenham's inability to win a trophy during the Pochettino era at Spurs. You can't help but see things like last night and where Tottenham are at in this competition and
just realize
start
the progress.
To wonder, like,
progress doesn't mean tin.
We can't always obsess about, okay, they didn't win a league cup. I mean, do you value that over what Tottenham are doing right now in the Champions League?
I have to say, no one is swapping last night so you can have a lifted league cup against Bradford or whoever you would have in the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, it's an easy thing to say today on the heels of a game like that. I know I wasn't saying a similar thing when Tottenham went out of the league cup, so, you know, whatever. But
yeah,
I mean, what they're doing right now on this stage, who was it that sent that email? He's right. Enjoy this. Don't obsess over trophies because sometimes there's more to sports than just who wins a trophy. This is really fun.
Francisco Ramos, your pod has grown on me like a weed since the second half of the European season. Great stuff. Heard your last podcast and comments on the Kaku incident in Kansas City. Agreed, it's not Cantona-esque, but the man hit was my buddy's father.
Oh my God.
Underwent eye surgery, seeing floaters in his vision, and may have a concussion. Sure, his intention wasn't there, but surely he deserves a lengthy ban for that. No.
Well, yes.
Yes.
That part is true.
And by the way, I didn't mean to minimize what actually happened.
No.
I was just responding to what someone said on Twitter.
Right. The only reason that now I feel terrible that if it was taken the wrong way.
Yeah. No, I don't think it was.
The only reason we say it wasn't Cantona is because I don't, like, Cantona looked at a guy in the stands and
assaulted him.
Kung Fu kicked him. I mean, this was, I do believe, for as bad as this looked, I really do believe that Kaku's intention was not necessarily to smash the ball into the crowd. I think he was trying to probably hit the end board.
Or just smash the ball. Yeah. You know, you don't always think about the intentions there, and he probably should have.
But results matter, and what happened here was really bad, and he does deserve a particularly lengthy
And Francisco,
ban.
Seeing as you have contact with this guy, can you send our absolute best wishes, and I hope he recovers quickly.
Yeah, wow.
Josh Lewis, before we step into this mess, oh boy, I'd like to say I love the pod. The energy and friendship between you topped with quality soccer news is unmatched. Here we go.
Friendship.
The good stuff. Why don't, all caps, why don't you ever talk about how good the Seattle Sounders have been? It's always LA this and DC that. It's disgusting. Steady on. How often you avoid the Sounders talk like it's a plague. He misspelled plague. Nobody likes the Zuli sponsorship. Don't know what that means, but we all love the soccer we're seeing. I'm aware the previous pod was prior to the Toronto-Seattle game. However, they are playing very well at the moment, and if they are not mentioned in the next pod, I will be very upset, which I'm aware is not your concern, but you can expect more emails. Well, let's cut those emails in half. We did give Seattle some props on the last podcast.
Yes. So he sent that email before
the last podcast, but right, still,
well, then I would tell him to listen to the podcast we did.
Yeah,
on
but
Monday.
He didn't say send an email in the intervening time saying my passion has been sated.
It probably, I mean, we did talk about the game. It probably wasn't enough to satiate him, but
whatever.
I don't know.
We're doing our best here. Keely Quincy, yo, JJ and Andrew. Every time y'all talk about Zlatan and the history of clubs, what club do you think of when you think of Zlatan? You guys do seem puzzled. We were briefly puzzled. I get Homeboy was a mercenary, still is, and all that, but I hear you both say Milan. I've heard it more than once, so JJ calm down and don't say, oh, come on, we said that once, go to dinner with a woman. Irish accent. I mean...
Wait, what?
No, I think he's trying to say that. My response would be, oh, come on, we calmed down, we did say it before, why don't you get out more, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But definitely go for dinner with a woman. I'm not telling you, it's a good thing to do. You guys never say PSG. I am a new soccer fan, been watching since 2017-ish. You are new. So I'm a late bloomer, but I was wondering if that was you all forgetting or that there's a rift or a spat that I missed in my studies. Just curious. Also, the raps were good. Andrew came with the energy like a young Meek Mill. Mm-hmm. And JJ, you had the laid back flow but sharp lyrics like a young Fabulous. Love the pod. Love you too there, Keely.
Yeah, he brings up a good point.
So Zlatan, I thought about it and I looked at the stats. Zlatan was brilliant in Paris and it was by a year because he spent 4 years there, his longest stay from 2012 to 2016. That was at the start of the PSG money movement. 113 league goals in 122 games. That's pretty great across four seasons. So yeah, maybe we don't focus on the French league, we don't think about the French league enough, I guess. And so maybe his time in France was a bit of a rumor to us.
But 122 appearances there.
Yeah,
his next
league
closest
appearances.
His next closest being Inter Milan with 88. Yeah, all right.
It's fair,
but
fair.
Look, the fact that it is, I don't know.
PSG. I don't know.
I guess by default, that's it because he spent the most time there. But it's not like he spent a generation with that club and then bounced around later in his career. He was in his prime. He was in a bunch of different places for a relatively similar amount of time.
Yeah, and no.
It's not, okay, fine. You're right. PSG is, if we have to assign an answer to this question, PSG is the answer. But it is a question, though.
Yeah. James in Asheville, North Carolina. My name is James. I live in Asheville, North Carolina. And I've recently caught offside to the top of my weekly podcast fare. Lalas and Mossy are still good. Don't know who those people are. Martino and his producer Roulette are good. Never heard of them.
Oh,
and
come
when
on.
He's not
Martino ran- sat in here with us. Don't be like that.
The bearded one. And when he's not ranting about Mourinho, but you two have become my new gold standard. There's what I wanted to hear. And that's why, Andy and JJ, it's up to you. Go find some of football's racists. The people who think it's funny to make monkey chants, throw bananas, and sing uncouth songs directed at Mo Salah, and get them on the show. Have a conversation. Find out what's really going on in their heads. Ask them about their childhoods. Ask them their opinions on race relations. Ask them if they give two dams about fines or stadium bans. Ask them their favourite flavours of ice cream, whatever it takes. Just be careful not to give the racist too high a pedestal. I have a spot in my heart for cripples and broken things, but not for racists. I don't understand them. Help us learn about the racists so that we can anticipate their actions, respond effectively, and beat them. All right. So it's a challenging question. And so I just thought about it and I didn't have to think very long about why we won't be doing that. And while I appreciate the passion of which you speak, I think you're misguided. Urging people to have a conversation with other people on important issues is exactly what we should do as a society. But that is based on an intellectual acceptance that there is value or merit in hearing both sides of a debate. With racists and racism, that grounding simply does not exist. Firstly, those who abuse, for example, Moise Kean, would not come on a show like ours. And if they did, what is the point of hearing from them that they think Kean, by virtue of just the colour of his skin, is inferior, worthy of abuse and degrading treatment. This is absolutely disgusting and there's no debate on it. It is wrong. Should children and young adults be thought about inclusion, diversity and the equality of people of all colours, codes and orientations? That's a resounding yes. But if we've learned anything from the last 2 years of mass media in public debate, allowing people a platform to air garbage serves no purpose other than to debase public discourse. On the podcast, we will continue to highlight and help others to call out racism, but there is no way we will allow somebody to use our platform to simply amplify it. This both sidesism does not extend to racists or Nazis. It's got to be that simple. They have nothing of value to say, and the First Amendment allows them to have free speech. Take it somewhere else. We're not helping it. Any conversation about race relations by doing that.
Couldn't agree more. Well said, my friend.
All right.
Is that it?
That's it from the mailbag.
CaughtOffsidePod at gmail.com, at COSoccerPod on Twitter.
You can join us on the Instagrams if you want to be a hip kid. CaughtOffside ESPN.
Is that still hip, or is that just now such an accepted thing that...
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
The Kardashians, they do a lot of it.
Okay.
Are they hip?
I don't know. One of them is Kendall Jenner, I think, is now the youngest billionaire.
Yeah.
The youngest person to reach billionaire status. Seems like an impressive feat.
Yeah, let's not go down that road.
Red card.
I'm going to go first here, JJ. Alex McLeish.
Oh.
He's been sacked as manager of Scotland.
After a brief stay.
Took over in February of 2018, topped the group in the UEFA Nations League.
That's right.
Secured them a Euro 2020 qualifying playoff place, but then lost to Kazakhstan 3-0. And follow that up with an unimpressive 2-0 win against San Marino. Now, I'm going to read a snippet here from Ian Maxwell, who's the chief of the Scottish FA. He said the decision to part company was not an easy one, especially given Alex's status as a Scottish Hall of Fame member. He goes on. He says now, ultimately, the performances and results as a whole in the past year, and in particular, the manner of the defeat in Kazakhstan, did not indicate the progress expected with a squad we believe to be capable of achieving more. So I would ask you this.
Yeah.
Alex McLeish's firing on the back of, by Ian Maxwell's own words here, essentially one defeat. They topped their group in the Nations League.
They won away at, they beat Israel and won away at Albania, which are big results for Scotland.
Is that a fair firing? Should he have been given a chance to, I guess, like, had he built up enough collateral with the Nations League group topping that he should be given a chance to make up for a couple recent unimpressive results?
Resounding yes for me.
Okay.
Yeah, and he has also a good track record when he was previously in charge and he left to take the job at Rangers. I don't think this is... this kind of instability is not going to help. It's a knee-jerk reaction.
I wonder if this is one of those moments where... And granted, they do have some players now. I mean, Andy Robertson, like, there are some guys who play for Scotland who are good players.
Yeah.
But I wonder if the fan base is maybe... Now, look, they should never lose to Kazakhstan. I don't care what the situation is on either team. Scotland should be better than that. But I wonder if the fan base is getting carried away in believing just how good this team is. And in doing that, putting, you know, extra pressure on a move being made, like you just said, a knee-jerk move being made... to get this guy out because of that loss.
Yeah. And also the nature of international football, they had a bad start to the Nations League and they turned that round in the last three games and did really well. I think it's a mistake.
Okay.
I think it's a mistake.
What do you have?
Red cards. This is moving on from the Argentinian fans are crazy, part 3000. Part 2999 was last week.
Yeah, the dead skeleton.
With exhuming your relative to the Racing fan that exhumed his grandfather's skull to go to the obelisk to celebrate. A River Plate fan got the QR code of a YouTube video showing River Plate goals against Boca Juniors tattooed on his leg. Now, am I weird that I thought that was kind of cool?
It certainly doesn't rise to the level of the skeleton.
Here's the problem.
Oh.
YouTube took the video down. It now does not link to anything.
Well, why? What's...
The QR code just...
What's the problem? Oh, you mean on his leg?
Yes.
Oh, so now it's...
So now he's going to have to try and upload a video to that site to get it back.
Why did YouTube take it down? Is it some kind of rights violation that that highlight can't be?
It may have been just the owner of the video. Maybe the guy who runs the video's account took it down. I don't think he linked it to his own account.
Oh, no. Let's see. That feels like a I hope for
whatever. I didn't hate that one, though.
No, me neither. It's kind of a cool idea. It's very creative.
But you got to make sure it's your account with the goals.
Right.
And you've got the rights.
You've got to be in control of the situation. Because, that's a problem now.
Caught offsides, man of the match.
Mine is very specific, JJ. It is South Korean football players who played on Wednesday. Now, we all know what Son did in scoring twice for Spurs in their Champions League victory over Man City. But he was not the only South Korean with a big day on Wednesday. You wouldn't have pegged a game against LAFC as a spot for Vancouver Whitecaps to get their first win, but that's exactly what happened yesterday when they beat LAFC 1-0 thanks to a 27th-minute goal from In-Bom Hwang, also of South Korea. Here is what that sounded like on TSN.
Tybert down the line for Ali Adnan. A little bit of space here. Can he get round the back of Shaq Brew? He's done really well. Comes back, and the ball in off the post from PC. Drops back for In-Bom, and the Whitecaps lead it against LAFC. And it is In-Bom with his first Vancouver goal.
It's his first goal for Vancouver, and he's actually been a good player for them this season. So I would say he's deserving of that. It has been a difficult go of it so far for Vancouver. That is their first win in 7 games, and it comes against an unlikely opponent in LAFC. So good for Vancouver getting their first win. Good for In-Bom Hwang scoring his first MLS goal. 22 years old, South Korean national team player.
That's awesome, man. Yep,
somebody to keep an eye on.
My man of the match is men of yesteryear, who, again, are going to get forgotten a little bit in the wash here. So a lot of Spurs fans believe that this is the first time that they've made the European Cup semi-final. It is not. In fact, Bill Nicholson and the Tottenham team of 1962, they made the European Cup semi-final against Benfica and took them quite close. This was the second leg from Pathé Newswheel at White Hart Lane. And, okay, they didn't win, but they got to the semi-final and they took the eventual champions, who were a brilliant side, right to the wire.
At White Hart Lane, Benfica, holders of the European Cup. José Aguas, out in the centre, met the officials and Danny Blanchflower, who lost the toss. Could Spurs pull it off? That was the question 64,000 fans asked themselves as the white-shirted Tottenham heroes stormed the Portuguese goal area. Jimmy Greaves gave goalkeeper Pereira his first touch of the ball. Already 2 goals down in the semi-final first leg at Lisbon, Spurs need to win this match by a margin of 3 to be in the final.
We need Peter Jackson on that. If he can, like, they shall not grow old, those videos, it could do wonders for soccer prior to the year 1965,
yeah,
I would say.
I mean, that was probably, compared to the Spurs team now, that was probably one of the last best Spurs team. Well, certainly the one that won the league.
Yeah.
With Greaves and Blanchflower.
The double, yeah.
And Bobby Smith.
Well, Greaves wasn't there for the double, right?
Was he not? Did he sign the following
I
season?
I thought so.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. You might be right. Got to check that out. But he played in that game.
Yes.
The footage is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I love Pathé Newsreel. They just use the same voice guy, obviously, for everything. So he's not, I wonder, will there be a goal in the goal area?
Portuguese goal area.
Ball goes out to the right. Look at Bobby Smith. Look at his thick calves as they run down the line.
You think that's how it was taught in broadcasting school?
Oh, there was a BBC voice. And I'm sure there was a Pathé Newsreel voice. So you know the way the BBC has taken in all sorts of accents now. You hear them, Yorkshire, Irish, all sorts. Right. Before it was, hello, you're welcome to the BBC. Tonight on the BBC, we'll have the shipping forecast.
There's a very important forecast.
Yeah.
Don't miss the shipping forecast. Well, hey, this was a lot of fun. Can you indulge me? Can I just listen to this one more time? Because this is a moment that I'm just going to like remember every part of it for the rest of my
life. Eriksen turned back towards his own goal. There's an argument. Aguero, is he offside? I don't know whether. In that situation, is there a possible offside with Aguero?
My goodness. As if there could be any more drama. Oh, that's remarkable. The goal's chalked out.
I'll just never forget that feeling of bringing my head off of the basement door.
I have one more thing to say.
Yeah.
It's fitting that your most memorable moment as a Tottenham supporter is a moment in which no football was happening.
That is very funny. Semi-finals! Oh, it's going to be so much fun. Hey, to you I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care, man.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.